horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back, 25 into hour two, and I did not necessarily expect to do a full 45 again with Charlie, but these are, I mean, they're big issues, and there's a lot of moving parts, which speaks to the complexity of the problems and why they're, you know, why they are so vexing. So, but I was amused by Charlie kind of channeling Satish there for a second. Sid Fernando joining us, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Sid, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. Sorry to dig into the 10 o'clock. Segment.
Oh, and fine. Yeah.
I think the one thing that's happened is that all of us are more or less tethered to the house. So there's right. So, you know, there's not a lot of options for, you know, going out and doing much, but I have got so many interesting, I think, topics for you, and we're going to talk about Medina Spirit and Greatest Honor. I don't know if you had a chance to hear Shug with us yesterday or Bob Baffert on Monday. But we're going to talk about the 2 3-year-olds. However, yesterday's tribute to John Forbes got me thinking that you'd be ideal to talk about what went on when Narrate produced Preach and Yarn. And in short order, the two of them, full sisters, the only fillies that Narrate got, the rest were boys, and all they did was turn around and produce Pulpit and Tale of the Cat. It's pretty amazing, and I don't think, I know we've touched on Preach because of Pulpit, but I don't think I've let you, you know, run with this before.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a pretty amazing set of sisters. Both, you know, they come from Claiborne, obviously, going far back. I don't know if your listeners might know this, but Narrate, her granddam, her grandmother, her dam is State. And State's dam is Monarchy. Well, Monarchy is a full sister to Round Table.
Ooh, and one of my favorites of all time.
Yeah, that's what I figured. You know, Monarchy's dam, of course, is Knight's daughter, and she was an imported mare, imported by A.B. Hancock Sr. So just to get your Hancocks in a row, A.B. Hancock Sr., he's the Hancock that kind of ran Claiborne from, you know, what, like early 1900, 1915, say, to when he died, which was the late 50s. So he was, of course, responsible, you know, importing Sir Galahad, Blenheim, horses like that. But he also imported this very important mare, Knight's Daughter. And so his tenure, that's A.B. Hancock Sr. Then A.B. Hancock Sr.'s son, of course, everybody knows, Bull Hancock. So then this line was then developed by Bull Hancock. And, of course, later Bull Hancock died, and Seth Hancock took over. So if you look at the ages of some of these mares, monarchy, the full sister to the Round Table. She was born in 57. I think that was about the year that A.B. Hancock Sr. died. Then State, the daughter, was through the Bull Hancock era. She was born in, well, actually, I'm just looking here. State was born in 74, so it was that was actually after Bull Hancock died, because Seth Hancock took over in the early 70s. And then you had State producing Narate, who we just talked about. And then, as you noted, she had only two daughters, Narate. One was Yarn, and the other was Preach. And, of course, as you pointed out, Preach was the stakes winner, and she was retained by Claiborne. And, of course, for Claiborne, she had Pulpit, who, of course, notably the sire of Tappet. Yarn was sold, and somehow Yarn got into the hands of Indian Creek Farm, that's Shack Parish. And so I believe it's Shack Parish that bred Tale of the Cat, which John Forbes trained. And of course, Tale of the Cat later, John Magnier bought into the horse, and he's still standing at Ashford in Kentucky. Preach, of course, the son, Pulpit, excellent stallion at Claiborne. And you know, there's some other interesting parts to it, too, because, as you pointed out, Yarn, that side, Yarn also had a really good Group 1 winner, actually, or only Group 1 winner. Because Taylor Cat was not a Group 1 winner. It was a Grade 2 winner.
Grade 2, time. King's Bishop.
Yeah, right. But Yarn also had, if I'm not mistaken, Minardi, who was a Group 1 winner, a top two-year-old in Europe. And more importantly, Yarn also had this story, a daughter named Mitt. And Mitt is the dam of Johannesburg. And of course, Johannesburg is the sire of Scat Daddy. So you can see how a lot of this stuff migrated towards the Coolmore end as well. And one interesting part of this also, Scat Daddy's son, of course, Justify, stands at Ashford. And the Gunthers, Tanya Gunther, when she planned the mating, has, you know, it's been said in various articles that one of the things she tried to do was have the sisters Preach and Yarn in the pedigree. And so Justify actually has his inbred 4x4, Yarn and Preach, full sisters. Yeah. There've been a few other Group 1 winners bred that way too. Harmonize, by Scat Daddy, and Conte Partido also. So, you know, it is quite a storied family, as you said, as I noted, going back to one of your favorites, Monarchy. And it's still very, you know, obviously very much in pedigrees.
You know, it's funny because when you bring up with Johannesburg and into Scat Daddy, the tie between that, you know, that female, the sister, who was not by Mr. Prospector, but, the tie is Jim Scaturcio.
Yeah. Yeah,
Skator, right. Being involved in Tale of the Cat. And, you know, you mentioned, I suppose, Sid, it's pretty remarkable. Tale of the Cat, who has got to be with these 27. He's 27.
Are you serious?
He's 27 years old.
Mm-hmm. And he's still breeding.
Yeah. 12.5.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Wow. Really? He's 27 years old?
He's listed right now, right? I mean, born in 94. And how many Sons of Stormcat are out there standing right now left?
Very few.
Amazing. Amazing. It's funny, as potent as, and you know, obviously you must deal, I know that hasn't Chuck Fipke utilized, he's utilized because he's got the tails, all the, right? Those are all.
Yeah, well, his grade one winner, Tale of the Cat, he's by Tale of the Cat. And
right.
He breeds the Tale of the Cat quite frequently. You know, Tale of the Cat has to wear a muzzle. He's very hard to handle. And, but, you know, he's still a good value stallion, to tell you the truth.
It's interesting. You know, it's interesting, actually, Sid, the Full Sisters, and this is not to take away from Tale of the Cat's stud career by any means, but here's Pulpit, who is a sire of sires, and and Tale of the Cat, as successful as he's been, Gioponti, Lionheart, who else has gone on to stand 40 Tales,
Tale of
Akati. He has not had as strong a influence when it comes to, you know, to getting a son to, you know, to go on with it from the stallion side as much, you know, as prominently as Pulpit's sons.
Yeah, but, you know, what's interesting is that you have, and this actually ties into John Sikora, but one of the most vibrant parts of that sire line right now is Kent Arrows.
Yes.
Who, you know, is the son of Lionheart by Tale of the Cat. And, of course, John also has World of Trouble there, for example. Yet another generation of it. So it's a speed line. Like, Tale of the Cat was a pretty good sprinter, wasn't he? His son Lionheart actually ran second in the Kentucky Derby.
That's right.
Then was subsequently sold to Turkey. But again, you know, he left Kent Arrows behind and another horse, Canadian champion, two-year-old, uncaptured. And Kent Arrows, of course, was brilliant at two, extremely fast. That's Barbara Banky's horse, and started in Florida cheap. Came to Kentucky where he's, you know, stud fee has risen significantly. And he's gotten a lot of, you know, very fast horses. World of Trouble, was it Buchero?
Yep, Buchero, Tim Gleischer.
Yeah, and so he's actually, there's been a bit of a renaissance, so to speak, for this line. And the guy actually, right now, the important person behind that is, aside from Barbara Banky owning Kent Arrows, it's John Sikora standing him.
Well, and John, it's funny that there was a chance that John was going to join us today, but I think now it's going to be tomorrow because we're going to end up short on time. And, you know, last week John wrote, to try to encourage people to appreciate World of Trouble as an option for their mares. And you bring this up, it's kind of timely, and John's going to visit and kind of talk about it you know, a little bit more. But Cantheros, you know, Cantheros has produced, you know, one after another in terms of, you know, in terms of speedy types. And, you know, he's got right now, he's, I guess, Cowan probably among the three-year-olds. You look to him, and in fact, the nice mare ran the other day. That's his, Wildwood's Beauty, for Scott Becker, ran the other day. Third in the stake at Oaklawn. So we're going to talk to John.
Because John, obviously, you're going to talk to him because he wrote that big full page letter. In relation to, you know, the horse kind of getting some, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of, I suppose, tainted by the fact that he'd been trained by Service.
Jason, yeah.
But what's interesting about Cantharos is that his really first good horse was another top sprinter. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, but that was XY Jet.
Yeah.
And wasn't XY Jet trained by the other guy?
Navarro, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just a weird coincidence that Cantharos' two big horses, XY Jet and World of Trouble, were trained by Navarro and Service.
We're going to get John to.
Not that means anything, but it just happened in the train of thought as we were talking about it.
That's true. And Buchero standing. He's in Florida.
He stands in Florida, and he's been bred to a ton of mares down there. You know, and he's a grade two winner, and you know, of course, XY Jet was a gelding and he died, but World of Trouble and Buchero from the same female families too. You know, there's, you know, and to be honest with you, you know, I just recommended World of Trouble to somebody yesterday.
Nice.
You know, he's standing for $7,500. He cut his stud fee down. You know, there's just, you know, there've been through history horses that either failed tests or, you know, had some reputational blemish because of the trainer, but have gone on to, you know, or were rumored to have used something, and have, you know, it turns out that those horses were still nevertheless successful at stud. You know?
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, the on track performance will go, you know, when the time comes. You know, last year, you know, his babies are his first. Season of babies are just dropping now, World of Trouble. So, you know, it's not going to be until next summer that you see product on the track. I mean, you will see 2 year olds next year, you know, that are in training, that are getting ready for sales options for pre shows and stuff. So you'll get some reads there, but you know, you'll see how they, you know, you'll see how they look too as they grow. I mean, that part of it will just, will play out as it plays out, and that might be the best advertisement, you know, that John could have in that, you know, in that regard. So,
yeah, and it's interesting, you know, the timing of this news and how it's affected certain horses. We've seen John with his letter. We've seen Coolmore with their ad on Maximum Security.
Right.
But a horse that sort of got in right before everything kind of spilled with these indictments and so forth, and was already at stud, and people forgot in this type of terms of having a trainer indicted was Three Chimneys Sharp Eyes Tekka. he was trained by Navarro, wasn't he?
Right.
Yeah. And he hasn't had any, you know, fallback from any of this. So it's just, you know, it's all about the timing and how this is blown up. And, for John and Coolmore to do this, it's obviously significantly had an effect. So that's an interesting development in breeding.
Let's shift from the preach and yarn portion of the discussion to pulpit and tail of the cat. Let's shift to the two winners, Sid, and the greatest honor. You couldn't. It's interesting the juxtaposition between these two winners from Saturday, in terms of being bred in the purple for greatest honor. And we'll start there. I mean, it's one of the nicest female families in the stud book, and the benefit obviously of Tappet, Tiffany's Honor, and daughter of Better Than Honor, daughter of Blush With Pride, daughter of Best in Show, on and on. I mean, this is a horse, as Shug said yesterday. I mean, you could really tell Shug's excited and is excited for the Adams, for Don and Donna Adams to have this kind of a horse. I mean, he's going to get better with distance and with experience, and that he's improved. All five of his starts have been forward going.
And he's also a horse that's, really bred for the classics too. There are horses in this family, which he just described, one of the best in the stud book, that, it's such a current family, too. Not only is it deep and encompasses a large swath of history, but it stays current. I mean, the Coaching Club American Oaks winner from last year, Paris Lights, is from this family, for example. September... a very good deep impact 2-year-old filly in Europe just a few years ago. She's in this family. I'm just talking about some of the more recent stakes winners. Larry Best's filly Monday Call by Into Mischief, she's in this family. So you can just see how pretty current this is, as well as being deep. And of course, when you go back, you have Belmont Stakes winner Jazeel right there. You have Rags to Riches, the champion 3-year-old filly, Belmont Stakes winner right there. These are all under the second dam. This is another family, by the way, that John Secura knows extremely well. I mean, the Better Than Honor family,
Right.
He can recite this family to you quite well as well. And so you have that just in the female family. The Broodmare Sire is Street Cry, an outstanding stallion. The second dam is Deputy Minister, outstanding. And as you pointed out, the sire is Tappet. This horse has about the most desirable pedigree right now of classic colt, and if he were to win a classic race, Steve, there would be all sorts of money thrown at this horse, because he's by Tappet from this family. Hands down, this horse has the best classic pedigree out there right now, and the way he's coming around, got the right trainer too.
Well, he's as Shug acknowledged, he's going to have to speed it up a little bit. He's going to have to, he's going to have to keep stepping forward. But the added distance, and I thought, stylistically, in fact, I had this conversation. Andy Serling's next, and maybe Andy will discuss this too. Stylistically, he is not a stone cold closer. I don't think. I mean, the way he basically, brought Jose Ortiz into the race, it looks to me like he's more tactical than, say, Orb. I mean, the obvious comparison right now is to Orb, you know, given their path. And as Jay Pribman pointed out, you know, breaking their maiden both simultaneously, you know, in terms of timing, fourth start, and, you know, a lot of that kind of thing. And, you know, it's funny. I didn't get the chance to discuss this with Shug. We'll do it the next time he's on. It felt to me, feels to me just at a glance. I haven't seen him in the flesh, but it feels like he's got plenty of growing to do, this horse.
Yeah.
He's well, a little, it seems narrow to me. I mean, again, it's only from in the visuals. I you know, looks like he's got some, you know, filling out yet, that he's, this is a very interesting development. And he's going to be, you know, he's probably, Sid, probably going to get too much attention now coming off this win.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve, I mean, I hate to say this, but this horse is Belmont Stakes winner written all over him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Obviously.
You got two Belmont Stakes winners right in the female family in Jazeel and Rags to Riches. And
right.
On top of that, the sire is the Belmont Stakes sire.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got to be the slam dunk to win the Belmont Stakes. I'm predicting right now.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, we had fun and I, yesterday with Shug, and this one, you know, this one right away lives up to some hype and expectation. And I, you know, I feel kind of badly because for Todd and you know, the Windstar runner, a lot was being asked of that horse to, you know, to have to, in its second start, to stretch from six to, you know, to eight and a half, and, you know, talking about prime factor.
Yeah.
And even last week, you could tell, you know, Todd kind of did it because, you know, the other one was Mutasabek was supposed to run, and he was going to wait with prime factor. And prime factor, you know, I know some people, you know, took some shots at him after the race, but he didn't run terribly. I mean, for what was being asked, that was not the timing that they had in mind for a horse that just broke his maiden at six.
Yeah. I mean, he's obviously his maiden race was an eye-popping race, but yeah, at this point, as you point out, you've got to get your races in whenever you can.
Yeah. He'll get more opportunity. We got about 6 or 8 minutes, Sid. Let's shift gears to, and we did at least talk a tiny bit about Medina Spirit after the sham, but some thoughts about this Protonico son.
Well, I got a call on Sunday morning. It was Wednesday. Yeah, I got a call on Sunday morning. I had the phone was a little away from me. I had to run to the phone, and as I was running, the phone said Bob Baffert. It was Bob Baffert, and his first words as I picked up the phone were, "Who is Protonico?"
That's great.
Yeah.
Who's Protonico?
I said, you know, it's, you know, I've had this thing with Bob where he trained the best foal of that particular runner, you know.
Yes, that's right. That's
and I
right.
Said, well, now you may or may not mean much, but you're going to have the best foal. You've trained the best foal by Protonico. But what's interesting about this is it's owned by the Zidane Racing Group, who'd purchased Princess Noor for, you know, $1.3 million or whatever it was.
Right.
She became obviously a grade one winner and then got hurt and she's out. But you've now got, during the same sales season, they also purchased this colt for $35,000, and he'd been a $1,000 yearling. So, you know, it's just for them, Zidane, quite an amazing feat to get to, you know, a Colt and a Philly at the different price points, right? But also for Bob Baffert to be training a $1,000 yearling is pretty amazing. And you know, of course, when he got it, it was a $35,000 2-year-old. But as Bob explained it, the guy that the Zidane guy, the owner himself, he came up with this colt and was sending videos of it to everybody to look at. Bob saw a video and said, "Yeah, he's, you know, looks pretty good." So this guy bought the horse. He's got some type of relationship with the owner of Britannico, which is Osama Abu Ghazale. Osama Abu Ghazale is a Chilean, but of Middle Eastern descent. And the Zidane guy is a Middle Eastern guy, a businessman. And apparently, although they're not related, he refers to Osama Abu Ghazale as his quote-unquote uncle. And I suppose what's happened is Osama Abu Ghazale, who owns Britannico, who I believe was trained by Todd Pletcher.
Mm-hmm. He was.
But Osama Abu Ghazale had apparently said, you know, to this Middle Eastern businessman and who was getting into the game that, hey, you know, I stand that stallion and you ought to take a look at this colt. And it was because of that that the guy even looked at the colt. Yeah. And now what's the interesting thing about it is for Tadico, you know, he's a well-raised son of Giants Causeway. And he stands at Castleton right now. But he stood, I believe, and I might be wrong, but I think he stood originally at TaylorMade. And perhaps Abu Ghazale, you know, was kind of miffed. You know, I'm just speculating here that Britannico was standing there, grade two winner, by Giants Causeway, and at the same farm was the new kid in town, not this time, also by Giants Causeway. Mm. And apparently, you know, obviously not this time was getting the lion's share of mares.
Sure.
And the popularity. So if I haven't totally messed up the story, I think it was then that he moved Britannico to Castleton, which, by the way, is where Gio Ponte stands.
Right.
The cap.
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of the background of Britannico, but he and Not This Time, both sons of Giants Causeway, had their first crop now just turned three, and you know, interestingly, another son of Not This Time, Brody's Cause, also with his first crop three, they're all doing quite well. Brody's Cause stands for 5,000 at Spendthrift, and I think he's one of the best value stallions out there. He's got Sitting on Go. He's got that Philly Calypso that Bob Baffert also happens to have.
Well, you know, it's funny. I forgot that that was one. I got quite a few horses in with Baffert yesterday, but that Calypso slipped through the cracks. I think, or did we? I can't remember if we talked about her with the. She won. Did she win the Santa? I think she won the Santa Inez.
Yeah, she won that last race. She'd already broken her maiden in the two in a stakes race, and you know, she was a fairly expensive. Maybe a couple of $100,000 yearling or 2-year-old. But this Medina Spirit, Bob was telling me, you know, it was shipped to this guy in Los Alamos. And the guy in Los Alamos, Bob related the story to me, called him up and said, "Hey, you know that cheap horse? He's pretty good."
Amazing. Unbelievable. That's great. That's great. I mean, and you know, because I know how frustrating it was for them to, you know, to have Princess Nora. In fact, Bobby even talked about it yesterday. He touched on it for a second about, you know, her having to retire when she did. So this
and Princess Nora, by the way, to go full circle on this story, is a daughter of Not This Time. So Bob has had first crop, Not This Time runner, best one, Princess Noor, Stein's Causeway. Bob has had Calypso, Brody's Cause, Giant's Causeway, and now Bob has Protonico, Medina Spirit, again, a Protonico by Giant's Causeway. So the three young Giant's Causeway horses that stud with their first crop three, and Bob has had perhaps the best of all of them so far.
And that fits into that piece that was it last year or the year before that you had fleshed out all of the various runners of you know obscure obscurities.
Pioneer of the Nile, he's the best. I mean, American Pharaoh, he's the best for Pioneer of the Nile. Justify, he's the best for Scat Daddy. Arrogate, he's the best for Unbridled Song. You know, those are the big ones. But you, know, you can just keep throwing darts. Silver Charm, going all the way back, was the best for his sire, you know? I mean, whether they're marquee stallions or not, you can go back and look at it, and it's uncanny.
Yeah. Well, and he's probably not done. He's got a few yet that are going to probably get cameos or at least get auditions on the Triple Crown Trail. But this horse, I think the race was exciting. And granted, it was, you know, real fast, early, slow, late.
Yeah,
but he was able to withstand the two others. It's going to be interesting to see how they go forward. Trio.
I mean, this horse seems like he needs to be driven from a long ways out. Whether he was on the lead here or in the last time when he really cut the lead on Life Is Good, he was in a prolonged drive that time as well. You know, and so there's some horses that you know thrive on really getting into them, and that's one of the things. All of the horses on the lead this time, as opposed to last time, he kind of ran the same race. He still got into it, you know. It's that great quality that horsemen talk about. Try, T-R-Y. He's got great try.
Sid, we're pulling the train out of the station, and now it's gonna come hot and heavy. We've got the Sam Davis coming up next this week, and I'm gonna draw that today at Tampa. So we'll look forward to that group. We've got the Southwest the week after. I see some variety of interesting horses getting ready to participate there, and the Risen Star is already. I mean, it feels like they just ran the LeCompte, but the Risen Star is in 2 weeks. So there's less than 2 weeks next Saturday, week from Saturday. So it's coming at us. We're moving.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's going to be a very interesting spring, winter spring.
Well, Sid, I appreciate it. Fun conversation. Looking back, some historic mares and Claiborne with. Narrate and preach and yarn, and some current rip from today's headlines action. And for those of you that are still planning, you got, you know, you're watching and waiting for your mare to drop a baby, and you're going to look at it, then talk to Sid about what might be next as you get ready to cover them. World, actually, we got the Stallion Barns opening next week. 510-490-1111 is Work Thoroughbred Consultants. And hook up with Sid and Roger and the team and get compatibility evaluated for your mare and improve your you're heard, as it were. Sid, thanks a lot.
All right, thanks, Steve. Talk to you next week.
That was fun. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill & Dale. Let's take a break. We're 5 minutes in. We'll get Andy in next, Andy Serling, and then either Seth or Ed, and we'll do some capping, I imagine, and look at maybe some Tampa or Gulfstream, see what either of them like. Back after this, hour three at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, and just about 7 minutes in to hour three, and we lost Andy. Okay, I didn't realize. I guess we had probably could have just stayed. In fact, all right. Either get him back, or we'll. We can shift to, there we go. There's Andy. Andy, sorry, I didn't even realize that Casey got me the note that as I was wrapping up with Sid that he had reached you. So, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I talked to you in the midst of the storm, and I never got the recap. How bad was it in the city?
No, it's winter, right? Isn't that what happens in winter? It snows?
Yeah, but, you know, it sure feels like the city.
Out with the weather?
Well, I'm starting out with the snow.
Conversation can't deteriorate from here, right?
No, because it obviously affected, you know, it affects what's going on. I mean, it affects the training and, you know, how everybody has to deal.
Call somebody who's on the backstretch.
Well, I mentioned Glenn, earlier, Glenn Kozak, because Glenn, and you've talked about
Glenn,
this, about
his number.
I've got his number, okay. You know, about, you know, when it gets to the point you can't incorporate the snow into the track with the harrows. You have to, you know, then you got to run the scoopers out and take it off that way. But you basically, we'll be clear by tomorrow, obviously, the track for racing resuming tomorrow. I haven't looked at that card yet for tomorrow and Friday. We've had fun talking about the past week, though, Andy. The that performance by American Power in the toboggan, and how Kendrick is, you know, really, you know, the aggressive approach has been successful for him.
Well, I don't know if it was aggressive. I mean, there was a $12,500 claimer an hour later, the same distance, where they went almost a full second faster the first quarter. I would say it was the lack of aggression by others.
There you go.
One of the more poorly ridden races of the entire year. It set a standard for 2021 that I'm sure some of the riders will try to break as we progress through the year, but that'll be a tough one.
I
love Manny, but I don't know what their plan was with the horse who finished third. I mean, horse is speed horse. Share the ride. Why is it a horse gets good using one set of tactics, and
right,
suddenly they decide it's the horse that's gotten good, and they go away from the tactics that have gotten them successful? Who came up with that plan? Is that like in the trainer's handbook?
the rider's handbook? Is that like a collaborative effort? I mean, what happened in this country that people got together and decided that speed was bad in dirt racing? Probably not people who look at statistics, who actually look at the history of the game, watch races, but it seems to be there's a concerted, you know, sort of movement, especially in New York, that speed is bad. Speed kills.
Well, you quoted frequently. What did Alan Jerkin say to the jock about
changing evolution?
I mean, right. Exactly.
So since you want to discuss that race, I think the story of that race was a whole host of foolish decisions. And it's not to knock American Power, but American Power and Tender are very opportunistic. You know, is it possible if the other two horses had gone a more realistic pace that, you know, maybe Kendrick would have sat a good trip and beaten them? Maybe, but I doubt it. So, you know, not to any way, clearly the horses improved with Rob, but, you know, that was a function of how the race was foolishly ridden by others.
Yeah, and Kendrick, you know, he had won it at the trip in that allowance race in December. And
well, he decided to be aggressive that day. And Kendrick understands that by showing a little aggression,
exactly,
a lot of other people that take back. I don't understand that mentality. It wasn't a mentality in the racing that I grew up with. It's not really the mentality out in California.
No.
And I don't, you know, you see so many cases of horses that have speed that go quickly early, and then they're able to keep running. So it's not like there's some sort of, you know, evidence that using a horse's speed is bad. In fact, just the opposite.
Well, and not to, you know, I'm not to try to self-direct this conversation, but, you know, regarding Manny, you know, we won that race with Kid Chocolate, and Manny's won the two wins the horse has is with Manny, and he's ridden them aggressively both times. He's gotten them in early position, you know, as Mig says, the, you know, gain your position going forward, and you get a successful result doing that.
Right. It seems as though, you know, I mean, I like Manny a lot personally. I like him a lot as a rider, but it seems like he's very good at getting position with horses, but those are horses that aren't naturally necessarily speed types, you know, getting them in position so that they can be effective against slightly against the nature of their talents. Whereas with speed horses, sometimes, not always, but sometimes they sort of take it away from them, you know, as though they're saving something. But I don't think that's a, you know, I think that's a combination. I don't think it's all about the riders. I think it's trainers too. I think, so maybe I'm wrong, you know. I mean, if trainers were so adamantly against it, they would be telling riders not to do it.
Yeah,
so I think it's a combination of factors. I don't think it should just be the riders who you're critical of in these situations. I don't know, but I do find it puzzling. But, you know.
Another example, actually. This is a little different because this was more of a closer scenario. But Manny, again... they took the Chad took the blinkers off Mystic Knight in that nine.
Mystic Knight was a different horse in that race than he was in his races out of town. His races out of town were not good. I mean, he blew the brake in the first race, but he didn't do much running. In the second race, maybe he was a little forward, but he wasn't good in there. He also stumbled at the start in that race, right? I didn't look to see how severe it was, and I probably should have, because I find sometimes trouble at the start and the charts, sometimes I disagree with.
Right.
Right now, actually.
Well, they say made contact with Clemenza after stumbling at the break.
Well, yeah. I know. I don't agree with... I think the charcoals in New York overall do a very good job, as you know, but I frequently disagree. That was Saturday, right?
I frequently
disagree with their assessments of things that happen at the break of races. I sometimes think they see things that I would. It was the seven horse, right?
Yes.
We'll just have to take a look at that right now.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, the brake isn't on the head on. But the horse does brake slow, so I don't know. So let's see if I can. I love a head on that starts with the about 2 seconds into the start of the race. It's always very helpful. Extremely helpful. What else, Steve?
I appreciated your kind comments after Saturday's win.
You're really struggling for stuff to talk about today. Were you just not prepared for me today?
Maybe.
You're really grasping at straws here.
I had forgotten that Manny won
the race. You got nothing to move on to? Withers this weekend? I don't know. The political climate, music, movies, I don't know what. It's certainly better than my kind words about your horse.
Well, you picked the horse, too, which is a rarity for me.
You picked the winner, too. that's worthy of a discussion, too.
Well, and we should mention, for those that did watch the prattle, I mean, Andy basically spent the entire prattle saying, this is a terrible field, and somebody's got to win.
was that wrong?
No, it wasn't, actually. It's
about as bad a winner's race as you could possibly find in New York.
Well, with a bunch of horses that are turf horses, and...
Not really.
No. There were like four, I think.
There were somewhere around an average of 0-27. That's what it was. And that might be a low count. Or 1-27, I think. It was. It is what it is. But so now you're a little hurt that I said your horse won a bad race?
I was thrilled. I was thrilled with when you get a chance to win, you just are happy with it. And you know, and he is a turf horse, so, you know, the upper. And you're actually, you know what, I'm going back. You're right, actually. There was one other, really, that was coming out of turf races going back. He, you know, his best main track race had been with a wet track, so... You know, I was not convinced, Andy. I got to tell you, I was you know, pleasantly surprised with the way.
Do you mind if I make another call while we're doing this conversation, so I can have something else to do?
You're just ridiculous.
We're talking about kid chocolate at 11:18.
Well, let me tell you something.
Maybe you need to send me a list of all of the horses in DT stable. So we can have like a weekly, that could be my thing, you know, the weekly DT chat, and we could go through all the horses in the stable, the unraced one. You need to provide me that DT information.
That's a good idea.
More prepared for this inane dribble.
Do you want to? Do you have any advice for me about Carlisle Bell, who we should cover? You know, who she should take her to? You know, for
you don't take my advice. You took her once. She won. Anyway. is there something else to talk about? We're going to have to be something better. This is really, this whole visit is deteriorating rapidly.
what did you think? What were your thoughts on the 3-year-olds down in, we got Florida and California, the greatest honor, some thoughts?
You know, he's obviously, he's obviously a good horse. I don't know how good he is. You know, I think there's always that sort of tendency during the prep season to overrate both the horses that ran that weekend and overrate closers. I don't know what it is about closers that enthralls people, you know, as though they somehow had to, you know, achieve the impossible, you know. It was a terrible field. The horse who was favored didn't show up, and probably it was a bit of a rush job running him a race like that, I'd imagine. So there was nothing else in the race. It didn't come up a particularly fast race. I don't want to be overly critical of him, because he's a very good trainer who could easily improve him from race to race, but the horse he is now, you know, he's a 50-1 shot for the Derby. Not that, listen, I personally think that the best horses out there are 25-1 shots for the Derby. So I don't think that and saying he's a 50-1 shot in the Derby is being overly critical of him. You know, I don't believe in those ridiculous odds that people seem to be willing to take in these pools, but I still think that he's slower than so many horses that were running last year that weren't even that great as two-year-olds. At this point, that he's got some catching up to do. He may catch up to them, you know, but the way the Derbies have gone since, you know, Orb, and I mean, obviously he's the easy comparison because he was also trained by Shug and he was a closer and he was moving, you know, improving in Florida, you know, as time progressed, it proved that Orb was an extremely fortunate winner of the Derby. It's something we all knew when we watched the race as well. It's not to say he wasn't a talented horse, but he also got an incredible confluence of events to be able to win the race. And, you know, I have a hard time believing that all of the horses that right now seem so much better than Greatest Honor are going to fall by the wayside. Maybe he improves, but I'm not overly impressed by him, though I think he's a nice horse. I mean, I think you have to be more impressed by the horse that won in California. Reigning Spirit, is that his name?
Medina Spirit.
Medina Spirit, excuse me. I'm terrible with names. Because he dueled. I mean, obviously they were somewhat inferior rivals, but he dueled in a pace that just completely fell apart. The other horses had very good trips, and he held them off in the stretch. He still earned a higher buyer speed figure. Now, I know some are going to say that Greatest Honor ran a bigger race because he was wide. This is where I sort of have issues with some of the sheep philosophies, you know, because clearly from a pace standpoint, I think that Medina Spirit ran the better race. I don't know that I necessarily think that he's a Triple Crown candidate either, you know, a strong one. But I was impressed with the way he won. I mean, I was more impressed with the way he won than the way Greatest Honor won. What do I think of the two of them in the Derby? Well, Greatest Honor may have a better future as races stretch out, but I'm on the fence about either one of them. They were okay, but it, you know, the other thing is it's the end of January now. It's early February. We're months away, so there's a long time that these horses can improve. Right now, they're both sort of contenders, but I don't suffer from that disease of needing to have my Derby horse in January or February. I find sort of the Thursday or Friday before the Derby to be a very good time to find your Derby horse. They don't pay differently. But you know, I think there's so many races left to go. You know, it's not, I mean, did either of them, were either of them as impressive as Caddo River was? I mean, I know that sort of winning off and running off against inferior rivals on your own is an easy way to run. But boy, he looked okay, but he's still, you know, not that fast. And, you know, we still haven't seen Essential Quality, who, you know, I'm not his biggest fan, but he's okay. We haven't seen him run. Right. I'm a big fan of that, where Jackie's Warrior is not going to win the Derby. He's more likely to win races like the Woody Stevens and Alan Jerkins. But, you know, these horses haven't run. I don't get that horse at all that won the Kentucky Jockey Club. I don't think he's, you know, Greatest Honor, I think, would smother him. But there's still a lot of horses left to go. I don't know how to evaluate Life is Good. I know everybody's gaga about him in California, and I understand it's Bob Baffert who wins the Derby every year. You know, but I don't have a strong, strong opinion about him going further until we start seeing him going further. But he certainly has to be in the list. I don't. There's other horses, the Withers this weekend. I don't know if there's legitimate Derby horses in there, but we'll see what happens in that race. The Sam Davis is at Tampa. There's so many races left to be run. It does seem like the contingency in Florida this year might be a little bit weaker than some other places.
You know,
what about horses like Speaker's Corner? Is he going to reappear for Bill Mott? You know, he beat Caddo River in his
I think Jay said on Friday that he had not, that he either had not worked or, let me see, I'm going to check
out now. I doubt
now.
He's a Derby threat at this point, but yeah, we'll see.
He hasn't worked, Andy.
And, you know, the horse that was 26-1 and has never raced in the Derby, when is Bezos running? Or is he never running? Is he going to be like just a name out there?
Maybe drop in
as the first time starter in the Derby.
Well, he hasn't started, and now with Bezos stepping down from the CEO role, they have time to change the horse's name. Bob said yesterday,
Game Shop.
Exactly. It's agents of GameStop. Or as I suggested, it was the one the other day. You mentioned that Kentucky Jockey Club winner, Keep Me in Mind, and I did see Mary Rampolini wrote yesterday, I guess he's targeting the Southwest is when he's going to return.
Boy, I can hardly wait. I bet he's a lot of people's Belmont horse.
Well, I think as Sid, we just talked about with that pedigree of greatest honor, he's the one that has got Belmont.
Oh, he's the big Keep Me in Mind. He looks like the beaten favorite in the Indiana Derby to me.
So mean.
Like the mediocre fourth that a couple of people on Twitter will tell me he had a trick.
In addition to those, I had Brian Lynch yesterday, and we talked about Spooky Channel, and he brought up, Andy, a real, you know, really the first person to use a specific horse as an example. He says that's a horse that absolutely has to run on Lasix, and, you know, he went to Houston rather than try to win the McKnight again, where he was going to have to run him without Lasix. He shipped to Sam Houston, and he won that John Connolly on Sunday night. He's a turf marathoner. There was that race. There was also the Palazzi. What did you think of Palazzi's win in the 3-year-old mile?
I have no idea who Palazzi is.
That's the Cassie that got up.
Okay.
In that Texas
mile. I have
no idea
who this is, or do I even know what that race is? But that's okay.
It
wasn't Sam Houston. I know that'd be Nick Tamaro that I would discuss that with if I were you. Just so you know.
I had Nick. Nick discussed it Monday.
Nick is your man.
We had Nick back on Monday to do some recapping, actually, because he had been on the course, had been on the feed. Well, in the rest of those races,
I didn't watch them.
That's
The Truska on the subway on my phone. And I thought the most interesting thing about it was that I managed to still have reception watching the replay watching the race live between stations. So that was really the biggest news for me about that.
Well, she's going to, I think, target, what did I see? I think she's heading toward the, Apple Blossom. I think I saw that yesterday as well. You guys are, of course, with the cross country, we should touch on. Big payoff.
Probably, maybe we'll do a little more Tampa this weekend because I think we're going to be doing more Tampa and with the Sam Davis. So I imagine that'll be in there along with the Withers. And, I don't know what the stake is at Oaklawn this weekend. We're only on this Saturday. It's the only weekend this winter where we're on Saturday. But we'll be covering Tampa, Oaklawn as well as Aqueduct.
Well, the Oaklawn stake is the King Cotton, is the sprint.
King Cotton. Who doesn't love the King Cotton?
Well, that was King Cotton.
Worth the pound fleet.
Exactly.
We ran all year. It was a great race last year.
Exactly. Part of Whitmore's championship campaign. The Sam Davis undercard includes the Endeavor for the fillies and mares going 8.5 on the grass.
Florida,
the Suncoast.
Florida Oaks, I think.
The Suncoast, the Tampa Bay for the boys going long on the grass. So
probably thinking about it, you know.
No, Sam Davis looked interesting. There's some new faces involved in there. Congratulations to whoever. I did see one player that won that hit the cross country.
Same person who I think took it down once. We had him on. We had him on
the show. Oh, cool!
Yeah, we had him on the show earlier. You know, last year. Really, really good guy.
Oh, that's nice.
That is actually not even the biggest one he's hit since then. Got a great opinion.
I would say because you had to be clever building that ticket on.
Yeah. Not an easy sequence. Well, you had to use your worst to beat the two favorites in that fifth race at Oakland. You had to come up with a tough horse in the eighth race at Aqueduct. Yeah, I mean they were tough, two tough horses to get in the same ticket.
Exactly.
For sure. Yeah, no, that was great. 62,000 took the whole pool down. No, those are fun bets. They are, and you know we show the races on America's Day at the races. So it's they're fun. They're not easy, you know. We'll see. The winner is coming up. What, about 7 or 8? I think
probably. They've
risk taking the Chad Brown Karlovich maiden breaker. You've got maiden breaker from Todd, who won a mile, taking advantage of pretty quick pace. He'd actually finished a distant third. He had Greatest Honor in a maiden race at Aqueduct. I still can't believe Greatest Honor lost. I thought he couldn't lose a day. He wasn't even favored. Trying to think. Oh, the horse who won the Jerome is in there. He ran well in the Jerome. I think the speed was good that day, but he was good. I was impressed by him. He took a real step forward. Now we'll try to go around two turns. I think they're all, you know, the whole field are sort of not, they're trying to put themselves in the Derby picture, but listen, there are plenty of horses that have been effective horses in Triple Crown races that none of us really heard of in February.
Right.
And I don't think we're looking at such a staunch group that you're supposed to rule out the possibility of horses emerging relatively out of nowhere at this point.
Agreed. Unless they make a quantum leap. I do want to mention two things too, Andy. I didn't get to it yesterday. Jose Lascano is going to miss pretty much the rest of the, you know, the winter action with surgeries on both his left shoulder and his left knee. And he's been kind of putting this off. And so good luck to Jose.
I don't know why they were. Why was it such a secret?
I don't know.
Why does it come out in a sort of afterthought in a conversation the day he's riding his last horse? It would be nice if they were a little more open about it, honestly. I like Jose and think he's a terrific rider. Hopefully he's back soon.
Yeah, rotator cuff for the shoulder, and since he was getting it done, he's doing the knee too, I guess, the meniscus work. So best of luck to Jose. Andy, Pat McKenna is going to be on tomorrow with fleshing out a couple of different things. But the first part I know of some news came yesterday with that Empire Six continuing to be run without a jackpot provision, going to continue to be a daily event.
Yeah, well, at least through February. Is it just through February, or is it ad infinitum?
At least through February right now. I mean,
like I said, anything that gets away from jackpots is good for racing.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Better for the game. Better for the players and better in general.
No, I'm looking forward to Pat tomorrow because he's got a few things I guess that he wants to announce and.
You ask him a lot of personal things when you have him on.
We'll save that discussion too for tomorrow because I think people will be excited to hear from Pat.
Who's your next guest today?
So well, we've got to make a
decision.
Well, it's either
I
Seth Merrill.
Or,
it's not a question of preparedness. I had Charlie again. We had a follow up to our first conversation from last week, so we had pretty intense.
Who's on next? I said.
I think Seth Merrill.
Oh, should ask him personal questions too.
Well, there was last week actually something very interesting that you probably knew because you worked alongside Charlie. I didn't know until last week that Charlie was a Maine native.
There you go. Wow, you're really catching up on some important racing stuff.
Well, it
instead of being set on, you got like the main hour. They could talk about their days in Maine.
Well, I said to Charlie, I said, you know, I'll tell Seth Merrow, and he didn't know. He said as many times as Seth has interviewed Charlie, he said he never knew that Seth was from Maine.
Maybe he could get Susan Collins to come on with him.
There you go. Well done. Well done. Andy, have a terrific afternoon. We'll be watching tomorrow and through the weekend. America's Day at the Races back for everybody Saturday. And we'll have some Withers action to recap next week.
I can't wait. I just hope it's as good as this visit. See you later.
Goodbye. Oh, my God. He's like a box of chocolates. You may get that, you know, that nice caramel that you like. You might get that, weird, you know, that weird nougat filling that. You don't know. For those that sit and do anything for three straight hours, I can't necessarily have that same level of output and interplay, you know, for the whole 180 minutes. Jesus. And then let me tell you, at 12:05, he's going to call me and harangue me. You have no idea. you thought I got an earful now? Just wait. He's the greatest. Andy Serling, everybody. Seth's going to join us next, and we'll table Ed. Well, Ed, if you're listening, we'll get you tomorrow. I'm sorry. And this has been a funny morning. Seth Merrow, good morning.
What was it, the pause? You said Andy, Seth Merrow's next, and Andy said, oh, and a big long pause. What was the pause there? Come
from
on.
From him or from me?
No, from him. From him. He said, who's on next? You said Seth Merrow. He said, oh. And then there was like a 3-second pause.
Well, because he's not used to having you, you know, his 11 to 11:30 is typically on Tuesday. And so it's unusual. Usually there's a trainer that comes on after him. And so, you know, I think I surprised him that you were coming next.
All right. I'll go with that. Andy,
exactly.
Box of chocolate. When you were talking about box of chocolates, I will remind people, because you were kind of alluding to it, people of my age group, when you went to the candy store, there was that whole same scenario with the Sky Bar, as you were talking about, because I thought Sky Bar, best segment was the marshmallow, second best was the fudge, and then caramel was okay, the peanut butter was bad.
It's interesting. I guess I won't argue with that assessment of the Sky Bar. And I think they called it vanilla, the vanilla cream in there.
I think you're right. You're right.
It was like an opera cream. You know, I don't know if Sky Bar is ever coming back now that Necco, you know, changed hands, and they were bought by those people. I'm going to forget the confectioner that bought them. They started the reproduction of the wafers, of Necco wafers, but I don't know. Sky Bar is made. I don't know if this is a crazy thing. Do you realize that Sky Bar, they would only make them like once a year, and they would make like a supply worth of a year's of shipping, because the molds are so difficult. It's such a difficult candy to make that the New England Confectionery Company would only make them one session a year.
I did not know that. Now I'm ready for Jeopardy, I guess. I don't know if that's going to come up, but I did. I I did hear the about the Necco and bringing back the wafers, which that would be have been at the bottom of my candy store pit. In fact, I don't know whether I've ever had a Necco wafer. That just didn't even look appealing to me. So that they brought it back. That's for a whole other audience.
Well, your segment is over, and you're never appearing on the show again.
Necco wafers as opposed to like a Hershey bar?
Are you kidding me? I want to apologize to the American service veterans for the greatest generation who received and also the World War One departed veterans who used to get Necco wafers in their care package, you know, along with cigarettes. The American military taking good care of you. Necco wafers are an institution, and you're not winning any friends running down Necco wafers. Not on this. Not with me.
I didn't realize the service was that in the Kubrick movie.
Full Metal Jacket.
No. The apocalyptic with
Apocalypse Now.
No. Let me. I'll pull it up here. Dr. Strangelove, and when he's opening up his kit in case they have to go down, and one Necco wafer. I don't know if Necco wafers was in there, but
well, the reason the military would include Necco wafers is because they were impervious to heat. So if it was sent to the Pacific Theater, it wouldn't melt. You couldn't send Hershey bars to Burma or Myanmar.
Well, good point.
So that's how Necco wafers.
Necco wafers in Dr. Strangelove.
Well, I'm a big Necco wafer fan. In fact, on one of my drives to Kentucky this year for Derby, I think one of my most popular tweets was I gave everybody a ranking of the flavors, and I apparently set off a disagreement because everybody, the vast majority of people, felt that the chocolate, because there is chocolate Necco wafer is a lot of people's favorites. I actually orange. I put orange first, chocolate second, lemon third. And those are my three favorites. Then probably lime fourth. Then come, the oddballs, the winter green mint, whatever, and cinnamon and pink.
Yeah, you see, none of the chocolate sounded maybe interesting for a try, but none of that sounds like I say, for me, send me a good Hershey bar, some M&Ms, Sky bar.
Boy, wait, it's all right. So we'll get you, okay, Sailor, we'll get you some Hershey bars and some nylons. Hey, Joe.
I think nylons were in the Slim Pickens box. It's in case they crash. So they have a translation dictionary and one. And I think he had nylons in there, too. Yeah.
By the way, Necco wafers first introduced in 1847.
This is great. Just before you get me on the air, you talk about it's hard to sustain for 3 hours, so I rejuvenate with the Necco conversation.
Exactly, you got me back going after I was beaten about the head and face for half an hour by Andy. I don't know if did you catch my reference to last week with, did you hear Charlie? It turned out that Charlie Hayward's from Maine, and Charlie was on this morning, and I brought up you with him last week, or actually I don't know how it came about, but when he said he was from Maine, and I said, I brought up you, and he said all the conversations over the years that you had with Charlie, that it never came up. The two of you never realized you were both Maine natives.
Yeah, I'm not a native. I'm a longtime visitor. My dad was a native, and so when we went up, we stayed in what was my grandparents' house and then became my father's house. So every summer my entire life I would be up there. So I was kind of a the honorary native, I guess. But when you said that a few minutes ago, I did not know that about Charlie.
Yep.
Certainly, I have talked to him quite a bit over the years and never did realize that. Where did he say he was from?
He's from north of Waterville and west. That little town. For goodness sake, starts with a B. For goodness sakes, I'm going to forget now. There's a private school there, an academy that the name of the town. Ugh, I'll think of it, or I'll look it up.
Okay.
So next time you see when you see Charlie at the track this summer, you can.
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, absolutely.
You can talk Maine, and of course, I said to Charlie, I said, I'm very disappointed. There's a reason to be disappointed every week with you. I said, but I'm very disappointed with Seth because the family sold our vacation house out from under us. So
you ain't kidding. Yeah.
Very, very, very difficult. Bridgeton. Thank you. Dan Hart, our friend Dan Hart says Bridgeton.
Bridgeton. Oh, okay. Maine. All right.
So
yeah, as you say, a little north, a little west.
Yes. Sort of in the base of the and you know who else is up in that? Who is it? I think Stuart Janney. I think has got. I think their vacation home is up there in the mountains. And actually, Pete. Next time, Pete will be on next week. Pete's family. I think his wife has got a. Is up in that those foothills there.
There you go again. All the times I've talked to Pete, I never knew that.
I'm like a fulcrum of these kinds of tidbits.
And Pete's now a Saratoga guy. He knew, down in the city and up in Saratoga.
Well, so's Charlie. Charlie and his wife have been
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Normally they'd be in the city during the off season, but with the advent of the pandemic, they came up to Saratoga and they've stayed. It's going to be a year, in a few weeks.
And I go over and walk in the park occasionally, and I occasionally see some Naira people out walking in the park on the dark day. So I think there's a little back and forth for some of those people taking advantage of Saratoga and, as they say, some dark days.
Well, we're hoping that it'll be something closer to a normal summer. There's just enough hope, Seth, it seems, and there's just enough attendance going on in various places. Sam Houston this week and Oaklawn. I got a nice email from our friend Michael that they're headed to Oaklawn this week, and they were only able to get reservations for Thursday and Friday. Saturday, he said they were already sold out.
Yeah, I was watching the pregame the other day, and at the end, Vic said, don't forget to wear your mask and wear it properly, and I'll be announcing that throughout the afternoon. And sure enough, every post parade, either before the post parade or after the post parade, he reiterated, wear your mask and make sure you're wearing it properly and everything. So you're right. I mean, it's great. Folks are going, and all the tracks that are doing it are trying to do it right. But, hopefully, and it's been kind of a mixed anticipation at the beginning of the vaccine was sooner rather than later, and then it seemed like things were slowing down, and over the last week or so I'm getting optimistic again that maybe by the summertime we will be kind of in a good spot. So got my fingers crossed.
Well, and even for the Triple Crown season, I think everybody continues. In fact, you saw it yesterday, Keeneland, with Shannon Arvin's announcement of their schedule, and they are trying to figure out, what percentage of the facility can be used safely and appropriately. Inching toward it, I guess. How about some thoughts? Anything from the weekend that caught your eye? Triple Crown prep starting to get serious.
Yeah, I thought Greatest Honor looked pretty good. I don't know whether I'd want anybody else out of that race. Prime Factor, the Pletcher horse, I guess you could make the argument, you know, stepping up and two turns, and maybe you could give that one a little bit of a pass, but really Greatest Honor. That one looked good, and as I say, the horses behind, I wasn't thrilled with. The Baffert horse was just, hey, it's another Baffert horse on the Derby trail. That was a nice effort, though, in that. You got to love it when a horse says, I'm not letting anybody go by me, because certainly it looked like the other two horses had a shot in the stretch to go by, and Medina Spirit just wouldn't let those two go by. So that was a nice performance, I thought. On the grass, I love the three-year-olds on the grass, and I thought Chess's Dream was good coming up the rail in the turf, Kitten's Joy at the Gulfstream. Because I thought the Pletcher Rapoli horse, never surprised. I think is completely legit. That one just had a little bit of a wider trip, but both of those will be interesting to watch, I think, going forward. And again, a subdivision I like quite a bit, the three-year-olds on the grass. And Drain the Clock looked good, and I guess they're going to try to stretch out, you know, no surprise, try to stretch out with that one. But coming off, and then subsequently the follow-up story that horse had a little colic like a week and a half before. That was even more impressive, the comeback there off of that. So Drain the Clock looked pretty good in the swale. So I thought there were some performances to take a look at. A couple of weeks ago, I will say, though, and I didn't jump in just because I was sitting here two Sundays ago, that future pool, and I was watching it, and I was talking about it on the air, and I said all afternoon, all others had kind of bounced between 8 to 5 and 9 to 5. And as I talked, which was late in the afternoon, it was back to 8 to 5. And I thought it was probably going to continue down to 7 to 5. All others in January. Subsequently, though, the next day I kicked myself because it bounced up to 9 to 5. And I think in January, getting everybody but those 23 horses and just about tripling your money, I'll tell you, that future pool the other day, all others looked pretty good. And there was a couple of single. Mandaloon was a big price, and I thought you could play around there. Proxy was a big price. You could have played around there. So there was a couple. I didn't jump in, but I probably should have taken a few swings, certainly at all others. Like I say, I think 9 to 5 in January was a decent price for all others.
Well, and the 40 to 1, you know, immediately they hadn't even cooled out. And I sent out a tweet. I said, how much for your Greatest Honor future wager at 41 to 1?
Yeah, that's the beauty of, you know, you having your horse race the next week as opposed to the weekend of the bet, where you get a good performance and you get the life sucked out of it. That's why Mandaloon and Proxy were interesting to me. I mean, Mandaloon is one of those horses. I mentioned it with the Pletcher horse this weekend at Gulfstream. You know, Mandaloon around two turns and trying some stakes company, and I'll give that one maybe a little bit of a pass. And I think it closed at 42 to 1 on the future pool, and then Proxy was a good second. I think it got 60, 70, 80 to 1 on that horse. So, you know, you're either on the weekend that they're running, you're looking for performances that not wins, but ones that maybe you can think will improve from. But yeah, that when they run the next week and run big, you're even in a better spot.
Well, we're actually at a spot where I got to get a couple of plays. What are you looking at going into this afternoon? You got both Gulfstream and Tampa, I'm sure, on your agenda, one or the other?
Yeah, and I pulled up scratches from Tampa, so I'll go through the late pick four, because there were a couple of prices in the late pick four. So let me just flip my it starts in the sixth race, 8,000 conditional claimers. I went 2, 6, 5, and 3. Two's logical, curtains up. Sammy Camacho on board, Sappy Joseph had brought this one over from the other side of the state. Now it's been training over at Tampa, but comes off a third-place finish in a fairly similar race last time, but does cut back half a furlong. I think that puts that one on top. But an 8-1 Slick Star coming over from the west coast of the state. I call it venue class relief. I mean, horses like when you go, for instance, Naira to Finger Lakes, you're getting a little venue class relief, and I think this one coming over from Gulfstream is maybe getting that kind of class relief, moves into the Victor Carrasco barn, and I think Slick Star, it'll maybe a little bit of a price, particularly off the last effort. I think the horse is better than that. Truly Stellar, Dan Santino on board, a runner that hasn't been seen since Presque Isle in August. but I think that horse probably fits in the mix as well. You know, in a pick four, I'd probably kind of stick with the top two. You know, it depends on how you parse out your sequence and what you feel like. I have a 2, 6, 5, and 3, though, as the horses I'm going to be looking at as I, you know, put the ticket together later. 16,000 claimers in race number 7. They're on the grass. I have it 1, 7, 4, and 3. She's Dynamite. Comes off a nice second place finish in a similar try last time for Kathleen O'Connell. I think off of that race, primed to run well. Unabridged in the second spot. Dan Santino on board a horse. They ran a good fourth in a similar try last time, so I think that horse will be a player. And Enema Cell, Mike Deeney, he's having a good meet down there. I'm kind of jumping on all his horses and using them because they're all running very well, but he's got a number of nice wins also. This one steps up off a couple of good efforts, and class-wise, might be up against it, but yeah, I think we'll get the right price to take the pop in there. So in the 7th race, have some prices potentially to fool around with. 1, 7, 4, and 3. 8th race, it's an optional claimer, non-winners of 1 3/4 of a mile. 3, 5, 8, and 2. My sister's keeper on top. Ran 5th last time in an allowance event. Was in a starter allowance 2-back, though, and I'm looking more towards that performance 2-back. Now, these are a string of turf races as well, so this is a turf-to-dirt move, but it's, again, a Deeney horse, and if you look down the page, there are some dirt races that are okay. So I'm going to look for this horse to be okay with the turf-to-dirt move, and on a class move, I think that's going to be maybe a little bit beneficial. Starship Reina in the second spot comes up. A couple of starts here at the meet. Hadn't been seen since June down at Tampa, so this is the 3rd start back. Nice improvement, start 1 to start 2, so should be primed for a good run. Gerald Bennett trains, and he's just lights out down there at the meet. We the Clouds in the 3rd spot. Hasn't been seen since a try at Mahoning Valley, but I think it's going to stack up nicely with this bunch and maybe offer a little bit of value as well. But another one where the top two kind of stand out to me a little bit in here. But I have a 3, 5, 8, and 2. And then go ahead.
Out of time, real quick, last 4.
Last 4, 9th race, 8, 2, 6, and 7. We'll put Wrapping on top, also for Mike Deeney. But Gerald Bennett with working on being single also could be a player in there. 8, 2, 6, and 7 in the finale.
Well, and you and I last week, we combined nicely in that race because you're that favorite one, and I got a nice try from Be By The Sea at 6-7-1. That was a decent...
I thought you were going to beat me. I was waiting for the text from you because I thought you were going to beat me down the stretch.
Can't beat Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth and Andy Serling and Sid Fernando and, of course, Charlie Hayward. Talk to you in the morning, everybody. Good luck if you're playing.
XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.